You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. A bright and sunshiny morning. And, of course, a lot of the state sticking with us. Anybody who's listening to WMDX, either, you know, over the air or on their app, they are now listening to Stephanie Miller. So, we, you know, if you want to stick with us, just change those stations or change the app or, you know, listen somewhere else or go find us on Facebook because we're there now, too, Brian. We're there on Facebook.
And this allegedly. I'd trust YouTube better. You can also follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
We're there. There's a lot of underscores, but Daybreak underscore with underscore Brian underscore and underscore Jamie. Right?
Is there a link somewhere that I could just click and like follow it? Like, you know?
I think all you got to do is go to Instagram and put in Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Yeah.
And
come
See, and I it's so funny you say that because I had a hard time on Instagram yesterday finding us. Where you had a hard time on Facebook, you know? So
I will say, I only found the Instagram via, and this is the only way I tried, so I don't know about searching how that'll go. I went by going to a Civic Media. I went to a Civic Media post that was collaborated with the Daybreak with Brian and Jamie show page.
All right.
So that's how you can also find us on Instagram.
Need to learn how to tag and suddenly the old man's not so out of touch, is he? All right, that's fantastic. Anyway, yes. So we're becoming we want you to follow us.
Yes,
we want you to tell people about us. The show is this incarnation officially started on a week ago Monday.
Yes.
So and this 3-hour extravaganza started a week ago. Was it
Monday?
A week
no, not even a week.
This Monday.
Four days ago is when we started this 3-hour version. Yeah.
So go to the Civic app, and if, like Jamie said, if you were listening, well, we should tell them while they're still in, MDX is still with us.
I know.
But everybody else on the network, we're glad you're here. We're happy to be in your town. We're happy to be on your radio and in your apps and on your thing and blah, blah, blah. So let's keep moving.
And we had Charles Franklin with us last time around, last segment, so I didn't want to interrupt Charles and all of his great thoughts.
No, that's true.
I wanted to make sure that Charles could get out everything he needed to because it's a very important poll. And if you were listening to the show behind the show on the stream, we were having an interesting conversation about the current races taking place around the state. But
and we will be focusing more on those as things get closer. Again, the primaries in April. April 7th. So we'll be covering that extensively. This I found very interesting because we all know that Wisconsin has a reputation of being a big drinking state.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to problems on the road. More than 7,000 impaired driving crashes happened in Wisconsin every year. They happen every year. So the majority of impaired driving crashes are alcohol related, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's according to the State Department of Transportation. Nearly a quarter of those crashes each year are related to drugged driving. Well, now the legislature has approved another tool for law enforcement to screen for drugged driving, saliva tests. And I've got to say, as I did more reading on this, I'm 100% behind this.
I think this is phenomenal.
Especially in states where cannabis has been legalized.
Right.
You can see the amount of people, and you can see it a lot because there's smoke actually in the car from people who are smoking it or vaping or whatever. And then there's people on the gummies or however else you ingest your cannabis. But driving, you can tell. There's impaired driving based on that. So now Wisconsin is going to have the ability to do that and check for drugged driving.
Yeah, and I think this is interesting because it's going to basically screen for drugs such as THC, opiates, stimulants, or certain prescription medications as well. Mm-hmm. And under this particular legislation, officers could collect a saliva sample during a traffic stop and then run a quick screening test. Those results would not be admissible, though, in court. They could establish probable cause, though, for an arrest or a more precise follow-up test like the blood draw. The saliva sample would be destroyed after the screening. And I agree with you. I mean, police have had, for how many years have we had breathalyzers? It's been a test for alcohol right there on the scene. But when it comes to drugs, they've basically had to rely on those field sobriety tests and their own observations. And when you're talking nearly a quarter of impaired driving crashes involving drugs in this state, it makes sense that they would have this tool at their disposal to make sure that not only the driver who's impaired, but other drivers on the road are also safe.
Yeah, and those, like you said, they're still going to use all the other tests. And this is not the first time that Dane County has tried this, though.
Right.
They were in a pilot study that went with the department, the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene, which I didn't even know was a thing, but but it is. And they did this pilot program, and the pilot found that the saliva test provided results that were consistent with blood draws, which is the be all end all of these tests. Even, you know, so that's great. And it's the first time, the first bill seeking to allow saliva tests in almost a decade.
Yeah.
So,
and John,
this is good.
John from Oshkosh, listening on WISS, chiming in this morning, saying another reason to not legalize marijuana. Why encourage more impaired driving? I think that's an interesting debate in the midst of all of this.
It is an interesting debate. And the problem is, it's a very layered argument because cannabis can be very, very effective in treating pain. And really, if you're enjoying cannabis at home, it's no different than you enjoying a couple of beers or some whiskey or whatever. The problem isn't with the cannabis itself. It's back going to personal responsibility. It's the person who uses it. This beer is perfectly legal in Wisconsin. If I have 10 beers and get in the car, is that the beer's fault or is that my fault? If I am sitting around my house with my buddies and Parker fires up his big wizard bong and we are we're doing bong rips and then I decide to get in the car, is that Parker's fault or my fault or the weed's fault?
Yeah.
You can't blame the devil's cabbage. You got to blame the person who is using it.
Well, and it's just like, I mean, you have this discussion with basically anything, right? Where it becomes a vice or, you know, you mentioned alcohol, but you can look at, I mean, even when you look at people who have some sort of food addiction, right? It's the same sort of concept.
But I could eat four pizzas and still drive.
Right.
That's
right.
Not comfortably.
No.
And not for a long period of time before I had to stop, but I could and not put anybody else in danger.
But the argument then becomes, is it your fault that you did that or is it the food's fault, right? And so it's essentially the same argument, but you're right. It absolutely doesn't put anybody else at danger. I mean, and this bill right now is heading to Governor Tony Evers. And if it's signed, Wisconsin would actually be one of 27 other states that allow some form of roadside drug testing. So this isn't going to be a test of whether it helps catch impaired drivers. This is going to really be whether it's implemented responsibly and protects people's rights along the way. And I think that's what people are worried about. John from Oshkosh chiming back in after our conversation here saying using alcohol is bad, but legal argument is not a strong one.
I'm not quite sure what John means. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of debate if it's healthy to use alcohol.
Right.
It is definitely not. I disagree with John. I don't think having a drink is a bad thing. Is it bad for my health? Probably. But in moderation, I don't think anything is that bad. But again, that's a personal thing. And I don't understand the legal argument part of it. The part of it is you can have a drink at home. Mm-hmm. You can have a drink at a restaurant. If you are impaired, that's you being impaired and making the decision to drive. It's the same with any sort of substance that will impair you. If you make that decision, and let's be honest, even without legalization, that many accidents in Wisconsin that are based around the drugged driving is not going away. And the interesting part is that the Dane County Sheriff made a point of saying, listen, yes, we understand that in Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, cannabis is legal.
Right.
Well, even if you ingest it, if you're across the line and you ingest it, and then you're still driving in Wisconsin, guess what? It's still illegal. You're still driving impaired. They can still lock you up. And judging from driving around this country from states where it is legal to states where it is not legal, boy, they're watching. Because yeah. we were in Colorado a couple years ago, and I had never tried cannabis. And whether some people don't believe when I say this, until 2 years ago, I had never tried cannabis. And we were in Colorado, and my daughter was joking with me, like, "Oh, let's stop at a dispensary." And I was like, "No, no, no." So we're driving back, and once we crossed from Colorado into Nebraska, the amount of state police lined yes. up, pulling people over, coming out of Colorado because they were sure mm-hmm. that there was, you know, I don't know what profile they were using. Our profile obviously didn't fit.
Right.
The old couple and their, you know, daughter driving back didn't fit the, we got to pull these people over.
Right.
But yeah, the enforcement is there. It's not the legality that is going to stop. There's a lot of things that are illegal that people still do.
Tiffany from River Falls listening on WCFW, which is 93.5 The Tap, chiming in on our text line this morning, saying, sounds like the firearms argument. It's not the gun's fault. It's the person's fault. If you do want to comment this morning, 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Now, for anybody who is wondering, because you mentioned this was a pilot program in Dane County, the Dane County Sheriff, Calvin Barrett, actually backs this legislation. And did so mm-hmm. during the assembly hearing in January. Now, he says that without the saliva test, his office has relied on those field sobriety tests to assess drivers for drug impairment. And in case you're wondering, no amount of intoxication by a restricted control substance such as marijuana is legal for driving in the state of Wisconsin as of right That's now. Right. So, you know, and again, I think... It's not legal to do a lot of things, right? You're not supposed to drive under the influence. But again, if you're going to have one drink, people do that all the time, right? You just yes. have to be responsible in your actions. You have to know when enough is enough, or when maybe you've hit that line, and that's when you need to have somebody else drive you, grab, you know, an Uber or you know, whatever it might be. But in this particular case, I'm always for things that keep impaired people off the roads and keep the mm-hmm. rest of us, as well as those individuals, safe, even if they don't necessarily know their limits. And I'm also for anything that makes our law enforcement's jobs easier as right. well.
And I don't quite buy Tiffany's parallel between the firearms argument and cannabis argument. I think if you were saying we're going to legalize all drugs, right. heroin, everything else, maybe you can make that jump. But I don't think firearms and cannabis are, you're not comparing apples and apples. You're comparing apples and oranges. And yes, are there too many guns? Sure. Are the amount of people who own guns greater than the amount of people that use cannabis? I don't have the actual numbers, but I'm going to assume yes. There's more people who would own a gun. Guns are a different story. So you have to, if you want to compare alcohol and cannabis, you've got two intoxicants there, low level, proven not to be 100% safe, but not to be as deadly as a firearm or right. a heroin or something like that.
What I actually find interesting is we have more laws and restrictions on things like THC and cannabis in this country than we mm-hmm. do in a lot of ways on our gun control. I mean, you know, if you want to look at it that way.
Well, the government isn't taxing guns
right.
other than sales
right.
tax. The government wanted to get in on the THC business, and for a long time they weren't. But now you see states legalizing it because the tax revenue coming from those sales is unbelievable.
Yes. Always comes down to the money, right? It always comes down to the money. It's 8:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And another executive has left the Trump administration over Minneapolis. So we'll get to that and more. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you're in Wausau listening on WXCO, if you are in Hayward on BZH or in Richland Center on RCE, we appreciate you joining us this morning. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We do appreciate you joining us. We like want to welcome everybody who's watching on the stream, too. And don't forget, you can go check us out on socials now at Instagram and Facebook. And who knows what else is coming. A lot going as the show evolves. And that's all with your help. So we're glad you're here. As the big voice guy said, it's all facts, no fiction. So here's a fact. A senior Treasury official who is a Trump donor serving as Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence is leaving his post after privately raising concerns about a White House-backed crackdown on alleged fraud within Minnesota's Somali community. So more fallout. This one, the Somali fraud thing, is kind of the basis or one of the jumping off points that led to the big crackdown and the big ICE infiltration of Minneapolis.
Yeah, this guy's name is John Hurley, and he had privately questioned a new Treasury initiative that increased the federal monitoring of international payments from the Minneapolis area. That policy requires banks to collect additional personal information on certain overseas transactions. Now, some career officials and banking leaders also have raised concerns to the administration, calling the order overly broad and warning that could amount to some sort of blanket surveillance of an entire community, which I think is probably what the administration is hoping for, would be my guess. Critics say it raises privacy, though, and constitutional issues. The administration is saying that it is committed to aggressively pursuing fraud and protecting taxpayer dollars. While I'm all for that, maybe we should actually be protecting the taxpayer dollars and going after fraud in the correct places, because this entire investigation stemmed from Nick Shirley, who is a YouTube journalist, all of 23 years old. He received information from the Minnesota GOP, and then he did this long, long documentary type newscast where he basically tried to find fraud within the Somali daycares. And that's where all of this stems from. It's
and
crazy.
If you watched any of this, it's insane, because he was shocked, and he made this a point that it had to be proof of fraud, that he couldn't just wander into a daycare center. Anybody who's left their child at a daycare center knows the doors are locked. You have to get buzzed in one door. Sometimes you have to get buzzed in a second door. There's always somebody at the front who is keeping track. The one daycare center that he found that had no one in it, because they were closed that day. Well, that's fraud. You can't close ever, I guess, according to Nick Shirley, who I'm going to object to the use of the term journalist.
Yes.
And just...
Well, use
you know,
it
he's
loosely.
An internet, he's an internet hack for the Minnesota GOP.
Yes, he essentially is. Now, Hurley himself has denied opposing the effort publicly. He's reportedly being considered for another role within the administration. Oh. So we'll see. I mean, he's a top donor to Donald Trump.
Yes.
He's an ally. But here's the thing that gets me in these types of stories. So if this guy had any doubts about this particular story and this crackdown and how it was being handled, especially around privacy and all of this sweeping financial monitoring, this isn't just a partisan criticism, right? And it also fits a pattern. People who question this administration's moves often end up stepping down, moving on. Sometimes they move up just to be shut up, I think is what happens. And that creates the impression that if you're pushing back, even internally, you're going to essentially fight a losing battle. And then you get shelved or you get quieted in some role where you absolutely have no way of being involved in what is actually being practiced by this administration. That's a scary pattern that we're in right now with this particular president.
Well, they want to make sure that if you're unhappy, you don't tell anybody else. And once you let, you know, it's almost that you don't speak out against the family.
Yeah.
So
it's like a mob
got that
mentality.
Yes. It's got that omerta where you have to, everything has to stay in house, and they're going to move you along. And part of what is forgot when Nick Shirley came out with this piece and the administration latched onto it, there had already been arrests and investigations into this in Minnesota. Now,
under the Biden administration.
Under the Biden administration, under Tim Walz, who is, you know, you can argue his reason for not seeking reelection was to spend more time with his family, but he also did take responsibility for this. He said that this happened on his watch and it's his responsibility. But there was already, the process was ongoing. Nick Shirley didn't stumble across some super secret cover-up. He went to a, he easily targeted Somalis.
Yes.
Once again, the immigrant tie. There's, I can't imagine how many daycare centers there are in Minneapolis. I'm sure they are not all Somali run.
No.
But we had to focus on these because that's a community that we are going to try to
It comes under fire a lot. It comes under fire a lot, especially in Minneapolis. Now, I have to ask, did you watch the entire Nick Shirley mockumentary? That's what I'll call it.
No, I watched a bunch of clips.
Okay. I actually sat down and watched the entire thing. Because I wanted to know exactly what was being said in it, right? And I wanted to make sure that I understood the context of all of it. It is, first of all, there's some dude who just, that's what I'll call him. He's some older dude. He's got all this list and he just rides around with him. And they are literally like Cagney and Lacey out there trying to like take down nefarious crime rings of daycares. And it is, it's the craziest looking at things. They don't even have a sign. They misspelled words on their sign. There's no cars in this parking lot. That's essentially what this entire documentary is. Why
you
they are harassing.
No,
why they're harassing
people. Parents drop
people.
Their kids off and go to work. Yes, it is. It was 100%
harassment. It was all harassment.
100%.
So I watched it. I did the hard work for all of you so you don't have to watch it. If you haven't seen
it. You should still watch it. If you want to check
up your
our
brain.
Facts.
Yeah. Open up your brain to what's actually happening and what this was about. It's 8:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And can Wisconsin do what Montana is trying to do? No, it's not rodeos. We'll tell you what it is after this on the Civic Media Network.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. We appreciate you joining us this morning. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. You remember 2025? Well, that's when Wisconsin witnessed the most expensive state Supreme Court race ever. That renewed concerns of a lot of people over corporate and dark money's influence on state elections. Well, Montana is attempting to change how corporate and dark money are funneled into those elections. And to tell us about that and whether maybe could this proposal work in Wisconsin, Jeff Mangan is with us. He's the founder and president of Transparent Election Initiative. TransparentElection.org is their website. Jeff, thanks for being here this morning. So for those of us who just recently heard about the Montana proposal, what is it and how did this come about?
Certainly. First of all, thanks, Brian. Thanks, Jamie, for the invite. Appreciate it. You know, we love talking about the Montana plan. Not only in Montana, but across the country now. It's we'd love to inspire folks. And I appreciate you reaching out and having us on your show. The Montana plan is simply taking a look at the way states give power to when a business wants to incorporate in a state right now, the state issues a corporate charter that basically gives them all general powers. And the courts have said all general powers means the same powers as basically a human being. So all of the regulations that states have put on over the last 150 years, because it's been about 150 years since anyone really took a look at how a corporate or how states charter corporations, we've been regulating on that general power theory. So all the regulations have been on general powers. But I'll dive into that in a second. But how this came about, I was Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices from 2017 to 2023. And in Montana, we have basically one Commissioner of Political Practices, a small little office of three staff that's responsible for the entire state's campaign finance, disclosure, transparency, all local and state elections, plus state employee ethics, plus all the lobbying that's done at the legislative level. So small little office, lots of work, never enough money, never enough time to actually dig into things. So that's when I really was introduced to what Citizens United has done in small states like Montana, small population states, and others. And as part of that, I had wonderful colleagues from across the state that I got to know. And one of those individuals was Commissioner Weintraub with the FEC. We became good friends. Her chief of staff, chief legal at the time, a gentleman by the name of Tom Moore, and Tom and I and Ellen, we remained friends for the you know, since 2017, exchange cards, those type of things. In 2024, Tom reached out to me and said, "Jeff, I've got this this mechanism that can undo Citizens United. I wrote a white paper. Would you take a look at it?" I said, "Sure." It was like Friday night. He's on the East Coast, you know, 7 o'clock. He sent it over, 30 pages, read it, called him up, forgot that I was two time zones away, woke him up and said, "Tom, we're doing this in Montana." And that's literally how it started. Tom's research into the mechanism on which I will talk about in a second, and my desire to put this in front of Montana citizens and now hopefully citizens across the country, say this is a real way to actually undo Citizens United. After all these, this last 16 years, we've kind of thrown up our hands and said, "Oh, Supreme Court's ruled, corporations are people, they have these free speech rights, we can't do anything." And we're here to tell you, we actually do have the power to do that. We just kind of forgot about that ability. So that's how it came about.
So let's talk about that. What, I mean, and that's where the nuance is going to be. What is our ability to basically overturn Citizens United? They say that corporations have First Amendment rights to spend independently in elections. Is this some sort of state level workaround? Are you directly trying to challenge the precedent that's been set? Explain that to us, if you would.
Nope. Actually, Citizens United is just, you know, one of the reasons we're doing this. It actually, when the Montana plan is enacted and goes, it doesn't overturn Citizens United. It basically makes it moot. It doesn't matter in the state of Montana because it won't apply to our corporations. So we're not undoing that. We're looking at it a totally different way. We've always looked at particularly Citizens United and regulations in campaign finance through that lens of the First Amendment. We haven't looked at how corporations are actually authorized to do business in the state in the first place. So we move from the First Amendment. I want everybody to move from the First Amendment and just move over to the 10th Amendment. States create their own corporations. It's not a federal government. There's no federal regulations that come down. Each state creates its own corporations. And like I said, for the last 150 years, all states have basically given their corporations, all corporations, general authority to do business in their state, these general powers. That's what we've been regulating on ever since. So if we, you know, Citizens United was basically the underlying portion of that was a regulation on a power that the state of Virginia had already given the nonprofit Citizens United. And they said that was illegal because they have these, you know, you give them all the general powers and they have the same powers as you and I. So we're taking one step further, going back to what the state can do when they charter a corporation in the first place. And it's simple, is they'll have all these other powers, limited liability, the ability to own property, the ability to hire and fire employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those same powers, with the exception of one, and that power is the power to spend in politics. They don't have the power, the right doesn't apply. So it really is that simple. And it's not something new. And before all the states gave all these general powers to corporations, before that, states would enact give very specific charters to corporations. You could only be a railroad. You could only be a railroad for 10 years. You can only own property within certain, you know, whatever it might be. They would give very specific powers to corporations, and that's all that they could do. But as states, we've got more and more states. States begin to compete to have businesses incorporated in their state. New Jersey was one of the first and said, "Oh, if you come incorporate in our state, you'll have all the general powers of everyone else. You'll have all general powers." And every other state decided to follow that realm. But they never gave up the power to go back and change that those initial powers in the first place. We just haven't thought about doing it. So it's a really unique way of looking at it. 10th Amendment, corporate law, has nothing to do with the First Amendment. It's how every business works anyway. They rely on the powers that the state gives them. So they're going to have to undo, if this is successful, and we think it will be, and of course we'll be litigated and all the way to the Supreme Court. But if they strictly look at corporate law in the 10th Amendment, if they don't follow what we're doing, they're going to be throwing out precedent after precedent after precedent, and just it would just put businesses in a tailspin, because not only affect elections, would it affect insurance and banking and financial things, and work with the shareholders, et cetera, if they want to carve out this little exception for, states can't, they have the power to do all these other things and tell the corporation all these other things, but they can't do that. So it would be really interesting.
Jeff Mangan is the founder and president of Transparent Election Initiative. You can go to transparentelection.org to get all the information. And I guess that's why, there's people who still had questions about, like, why do all these companies incorporate in Delaware? And you answered that, because every state is doing it differently. In Montana in particular, what roadblocks are in front of trying to get this plan passed? Because it seems to make sense.
Corporations.
Yes, well, that's true.
Corporations, the political industrial establishment, everyone has gotten used to working under Citizens United for the past 16 years, kind of forgot about these things. Used to be a lot different before 2010, really. And in the way people not only campaigned for office or raised money, or worked with corporations, and others, and the beauty of the Montana plan. The beauty of it to me and to citizens is it affects everybody the same. There's no carve out for good C4s or bad C4s, friends of a political side or not friends of a political side. And that's kind of where that opponent goes is, while they want it to affect the way the other people spend money and work, but they don't want it to affect themselves. So when I say it affects everybody, it affects for-profit corporations, C-corps, S-corps, LLCs. It affects nonprofits, C-3s, which shouldn't be spending in elections in the first place, true. C-4s, unions, associations. Wow. And that's, and when people start, well, unions, C-4, they have a really good C-4. We've been, it's like, if you want to make this work, you got to rip the Band-Aid off. And make it work. So you're either for dark money or you're not. You're either against dark money or you're not. So C4s have been that conduit for all of this dark money since Citizens United. So a C4 is, and they're very good C4s, social welfare organizations, a lot of them doing a lot of good work. And I like to tell folks when I talk about this is, guess what they get to do after the Montana plan? They get to be really damn good social welfare organizations.
Still get to do your work.
Doing all the good work that they wanted to do. They just won't be able to write a check from their general fund to support or oppose a candidate or an issue. And that's kind of where the rub is. Well, that's, where the rub is, particularly with some of the larger ones that have become this machine for moving money through. So, a C4, a person gives a lot of money to a C4 to remain anonymous because they don't have to identify their donors. The C4 writes a check to a political action committee. The political action committee then discloses, like it should, where they got that contribution from, and they disclose that it's the C4. But no one ever knows about those underlying donors. So we're going to take that away. So, and if you want to raise money, still support issues, create a PAC. Only accept contributions. You could only accept in Montana, only accept contributions from individuals, disclose all of that. Same thing,
Jeff, we're short on time, but I wanted to know, how is this playing in Montana? How are the voters taking this? Are they for it, against it? Where do they fall?
People love it. And all you have to do, and I'm sure you know this too, and I usually start off every conversation I have with somebody, doesn't matter what political persuasion they are, just ask them the question, do you think there's too much money in politics? And every single one of them say, yes, there is. Then we've got an agreement. We can start talking about what potential solution is. So people love it. They see probably the same thing we were talking about right before the show started, Jamie. They see all this money flooding in. They don't know who's paying for the messaging. They can't make an informed decision on a candidate or an issue because there's just so darn much of it. They don't know who to trust.
Yeah.
And if we think back, it's only been 16 years. Before that, things were a little bit different. Candidates and folks were talking about issues. They'd come to your door. They'd talk to you. You could go out and see them. You could ask those questions. You could take a look at their mailer and find out it came from the campaign, yada, yada, yada. And you didn't have to worry about all of this money flooding. Yeah. And it's just gotten, every day I get an email. An email,
Jeff,
set up.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks for being here. Jeff Mangan,
Thank you. Founder
and president of TransparentElection.org. We will be back with more on,
Civic Media Network. Daybreak.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. This is Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And I heard a little have it your way coming in. That's because how many times have you thought to yourself, well, I've had a fast food experience and maybe I'm happy about it, maybe I'm not. I wish I could talk to somebody in charge. Well, we know we can't call the clown and talk to Ronald McDonald. We know we can't. We can. The head of Culver's is always on his commercials, but I'm betting he's not taking our calls.
Yeah.
Burger King, you're not going to get the creepy. You're not going to get the creepy king, but you're going to get just as close because Burger King is. We talk about transparency all the time. Burger King is ready to be transparent.
Yes.
They're giving customers direct access to its president, Tom Curtis. They publicly shared his phone number for feedback. This couldn't possibly go wrong.
Should we call him right now? I feel like we need to call this because here's the thing. Is this actually his number or did they come up with some sort of line? Yeah, are you calling? Call this number.
I'm thinking about it.
Call it. Call the number. We'll keep talking.
I'm not
going
to give the number out now because it'll get a busy signal.
No.
But you can call this number. You can share your experience, suggestions, or complaints directly with company leadership. Now, I full disclosure, one, I am not paid by Burger King, but two, I love Burger King. The Whopper beats any other fast food burger. And I know I'm a huge fan of Culver's. That doesn't throw shade at Culver's, but I love a Whopper.
Do you know what I used to love at Burger King that they got rid of and I was so sad? It basically...
The original chicken sandwich?
The chicken Whopper that they had. That kept me fed through both pregnancies.
Really?
I was like, I craved very few things when I was pregnant with both of my boys. Chicken Whoppers with a frozen Coke? Oh, that was my go-to. Every single time Corey would say to me, should we go get something to eat? Like, here I am, this pregnant woman on bed rest. It took a village to get me into the car. And I'd be like, we'd get me in the back seat. My feet would be up. And he'd be like, where do you want to go eat? And I'd be like, I just want a chicken Whopper. That's all that I ever wanted. I didn't want anything else. It kept me fed and happy while I was pregnant with both of my boys. And those pregnancies were miserable. So I was happy to have one thing.
I can't remember. Was that a deep fried patty or a grilled patty?
No, it was just a grilled patty. But it had all of the same toppings as the Whopper. So it was delicious, and I felt better because it was chicken. So as I'm pounding this thing down, I was like, oh, it's not as many calories. It's fine.
Actually, a Whopper, surprisingly, not that many because it's a regular hamburger.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you could call. And
how's it going in there? Did you get through?
It goes straight to a voicemail. It says they're getting a lot of calls, but it has a lovely message saying that they're listening to everything and they will get back to you if you leave a message.
Nobody's getting back to me. Let's be real.
Hey, he sounded very sincere.
Well, of course
he did. It was the man himself.
Can we actually call it? Put the voicemail on the air?
I can call it again.
Let's do that. I want to put the voicemail on the air so people know what they're going to get. The move, though, of giving out Tom Curtis's phone number, or this phone number that Parker is so diligently working on over there, is tied to Burger King's longtime slogan, "Have it your way," where they emphasize that customers help shape the brand's direction. Mm-hmm. And according to Burger King, guest feedback has already influenced menu innovations.
Here we go.
Okay, here we go. Right, dialing.
I'm at Burger King. Really appreciate you calling to share your thoughts on your BK experience or just on BK in general.
Okay.
Your feedback is really important to me, and we have tons of calls coming in right now, which is awesome. But it also means that I can't return every single call. But I will tell you this. We are looking at every single one, every single text, and listening to every single voicemail. So record your message after the beep, or you can text me at this number, and we're going to get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks again, and have a great day. Bye now.
Hi, Tom. My name is Jamie Martinson. I'm a host of a radio show in Wisconsin. It's called Daybreak on the Civic Media Network. We were talking about this ingenious marketing plan that you have, and we just wanted to show our listeners that it was real. My co-host, Brian Noonan, is here. We are Burger King fans, and thank you so much for being open to your customers. That's all we really had to say today.
And I have only one piece of feedback, two pieces. One, I'm a huge fan of the Whopper, always a fan. The Royal Crispy Wraps, Tom, a little smaller tortilla, because I understand the amount of chicken that can go into a Royal Crispy Wrap. Maybe make the tortilla a little smaller so the chicken seems more prevalent. That would be my only piece of feedback. They're tasty the way they are, but a little less tortilla.
All right, bring back the chicken Whopper, too. Well, thank you very
much.
What's
our hotline number for Tom to call us back?
Our hotline number is 1-855-752-4842. So if you get this and you want to talk, we'd love to talk to you. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Tom.
Have a great day.
Have it your way, buddy.
I mean, that was easy. There you go. Yeah. If you have to lodge a complaint, there you have it. But back to what we were saying.
Or just constructive criticism.
Right.
Just a little constructive criticism.
Burger King says that that type of feedback has already influenced some menu innovations, including the $1 million Whopper contest.
People designed. People got to design their own Whopper.
I love that. Some restaurant modernization efforts and operational improvements as well. So, if this is what it is, there you go.
They're one big misstep. Remember when they did that, it was a Halloween Whopper with the black bun that they used.
Oh, that was weird.
Squid ink or whatever in the bun. Yeah,
no, that was weird. They do go out on a limb for, special holidays a lot. And I get it. It's promotional. It's advertising. I get it.
Shoot your shot.
Curtis says that he's looking forward to live, open, and honest conversations by getting these calls to better understand guest experiences. And really, in the fast food industry, this is pretty rare to be able to call a number, whether it's legit or not. And by the way, that number, in case you're a Burger King connoisseur.
Oh, yes, now you can give it out.
Yeah, now we can give it out. If you're a Burger King connoisseur, 305-874-0520 305-874-0520 if you have a beef, a compliment, or some constructive criticism for the president of Burger King.
I grew up two blocks from a Burger King, one of the originals where you could still walk in and see the flame broiler in the back.
Right.
And as a kid, that was the coolest thing, watching the burgers get flamed and they just dropped into the burger pit.
I just liked the crowns. I thought I was a princess.
I love the crowns too. We still think you're a princess, Jamie.
Thank you.
And you prove it every morning here on Daybreak. Yes, Parker, we see it's time to go. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the show. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.